So what have the last couple of months been like being on Raw and being on the road again?
I was away from the business for quite a while, but I constantly work out, so I didn't have to really increase my workouts or anything like that. But it's been fun. Darren's been a great person. I found out that he's very, he's kind of like Bruno Sammartino, kind of really good guy out of the ring, but a good guy in the ring also. So it's a pleasure working for him.
What has it
been? With him, excuse me.
Okay. What has it been like to kind of like experience the way the business has changed since you were the most active in it?
Yeah, it's changed a lot. And, years ago, there was sort of a little bit of an art in the ring. And you never talked about the whole match. You talked about the ending, about maybe the last 4 seconds of what the match was being. And then you'd go into the ring and you'd slowly try to draw the people more and more into the match. You started out real slow and you ended at a peak. And you listened to the crowd and you'd figure out that, hey, this is as high as I can get them. Let's get out of here. Go home. it worked very well. And they don't do that. They usually script the whole match. And then, if they have something that's not going right with the people, they have a hard time changing it in the ring.
So, in terms of how you think that affects, the modern worker, do you feel like that they think less on the fly? They're not as crafty as you guys?
Well, they're not. We didn't organize anything. We went by what the crowd was reacting to.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would draw the people into the match throughout the match. It was all about listening to the crowd, see what kind of noise they were making, and try to get that noise higher and higher and higher, and then have an ending.
I gotcha. So what...
they have a high spot, and sometimes the biggest high spots in the middle of the match are at the beginning of the match, not at the end.
Yeah.
They're very good athletes. They're putting their life on the line with the things they're doing. And you got to really love them for the things they're putting their bodies through and to entertain the people.
So you said before that, Darren's rubbed you the right way, he's got a good attitude and things like that. But is there anybody else on the roster that you've spent some time with that you were really surprised with how much of a throwback they were?
Yeah, I don't know anybody else. Even when I was wrestling before, I never hung around. I was with the guys in the ring. And just a very little bit in the dressing room. I didn't hang around the group in the business. I was sort of an individual. I don't know the people in the business now well enough to say, hey, this guy is a great guy or whatever.
I gotcha.
Okay. Don't hang around them.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about, you were on the road for a while. So it kind of, I don't want to say detracted, but it kind of sidetracked your mission of this book. So let's just talk a little bit about what you think the importance of this book is to people.
Doing a plethora of libraries prior to going back and being Darren Young's life coach, and I got to meet a lot of people, a lot of good people, a lot of kids that were excited to be at the meetings and the talks, and the book, I don't really care if somebody buys the book or not, if they're just going to read it. I'd like them to study it, because I learned 6 principles from high school and junior high school wrestling, and I tested them in 2 colleges, and I left marks that are still in that college today, the college in the 70s, the early 70s. Then when I got done with those 2 colleges, I went out in the world of professional wrestling, and I conquered that business because of the 6 principles. And when I left home in Princeton, Minnesota, everybody told me I would never make it in the business because I'm not Mad Dog, I'm not the Butcher, I don't have a gimmick, you're just like a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't pay any attention to that because of those 6 principles. I was very confident that I was going to get ahead in the wrestling business because of what those 6 principles did for me in college. I didn't doubt myself. I didn't question. You can't question yourself when you're going to go out and do something. You got to be confident. You can't wonder, well, that guy said I couldn't do it. I didn't pay any attention to that. I drove out of Princeton, Minnesota, thinking I was going to get to Madison Square Garden one way or another.
For people that haven't read the book, there's one story in particular that if you'd like to, I would love for you to share it, because it was at a moment in your career where you were kind of on the upper mid-card, and your career could have went either of one way. You could have been like a steady mid-carder, or you could have like propelled yourself to become, you know, the superstar that we know that you did become. But you were in the car with Dusty Rhodes and a couple of other guys, and you got offered something and you turned it down, and it kind of made a huge impact. Can you just talk about that story for us?
Well, you know, just before I start doing it though, this is the most important decision I made in my life. And this is the reason why I got to replace Bruno Sammartino, the greatest wrestler ever in the history of the business. If I would have not made this decision, I wouldn't have got anywhere. Anyway, we're down in Atlanta, Georgia. We just got done wrestling. I wrestled Jack Briscoe that night for the NWA title. And a group of people asked me if I wanted to go with them. And back then, you had to have the people that had been in the business, you had to have them be your friends, because they're the ones that had the contacts with you to the promoters. And I was in the car. We were riding around Atlanta, Georgia on a sort of a bypass. It took a half an hour to go around the whole city. or an hour, I should say. Anyway, they started smoking marijuana. And I rolled my window down. And then the driver rolled the window back up. And I was sitting there, and I sat there for a little while longer. And I didn't care whether they did marijuana. I didn't want to be there. Anyway, I tried to roll my window down, and the driver locked the window in the back seat where I was sitting. And I sat there for a little while longer. You know, I thought about pretending that I was doing marijuana with it. I thought about pretending just to make them be my friends. But I learned something about a peer pressure in eighth grade, and I did something like that. That I thought I'd make these guys my friends by doing something wrong. It was the worst decision I ever made in my life, and I remembered that. So I said, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to give in to their peer pressure. They wanted me to fit in with their group. And you don't want to fit in with anybody's group. You want to be an individual. And I asked them to stop the car, and they wouldn't stop the car. I wanted to get out. I wanted to walk home. And I didn't know where the heck I was. I don't know how long it would have taken me to get home. Probably a long, long time.
Yeah.
Anyway, they pulled over to go in a nightclub. I walked home that night. I didn't get home till 8:30 in the morning. And my wife was expecting me about maybe a 1 o'clock at the most. And she was crying when I got home. And I told her what happened, and she was very happy. She gave me a hug. And I want to tell you why that was the best decision that I ever made in my life. Vince McMahon Sr. and all the promoters knew when Vince wants a wrestler to be the champion, he has to be a good guy out of the ring, better than in the ring. All the promoters knew that. And when I made that decision to walk away and not try to fit in with these guys, that got around to everybody in the business. Back then, if you tell a wrestler, it was like telling a telephone.
Mm-hmm.
So every promoter knew that I walked away from the top guys in the business, and I was just getting started. And then in 1977, when Vince McMahon Sr. was calling some people up, actually the promoters, and saying, I want to have an All-American boy to replace Bruno Sammartino. And that was a few years after what happened in the car. The promoters remembered that I turned him down. If that promoter would have sent one of those guys that were in the car and they were doing that and they would have done that in his territory, Vince would have been very mad at the promoter that sent that guy to him.
Oh, sure.
They said Bob Backlund's the best guy to do that. Every promoter said my name to Vince McMahon Sr., and Vince McMahon Sr. didn't know me. But every promoter that he called said my name because I made this decision to stand up for some principles. You never bend them. And that's what made my whole career. And I'll never forget that. And I never talked to the people that were in the car after that about it. I never questioned them. I didn't care if they did it or not. I said it's not healthy for you. And a lot of them are gone right now because of it.
Considering how, you know, Mr. McMahon Sr., you know, took that, I don't want to say a risk on you because you were incredibly successful before that, but to have that type of faith in you, what do you think that
was? It was a great risk.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great risk. And, you know, he had big houses and doing big business up there. Mm-hmm. To come in with somebody that was a new guy in the business, that was a big risk. But you know what, really, he became like a dad to me because he told me things and he kept his word on every single one of the things that he told me. And there was good reasons for him maybe not to put the belt on me. And people were trying to talk him out of it.
Where do you think you'd be if, I mean, cause this is the thing, I mean, we've had conversations before and I'm just like kind of in awe of your poise and your determination and, you know, your attention to detail and things like that. Where do you think you'd be if you weren't a wrestler? What do you think you'd want to do? And how do you think you'd apply all the things that you've learned in life to that?
Yeah, I learned how to, do drywall and stuccoing houses. Maybe I would have did that. I don't know. But I kind of like that. When I was in 10th grade, I went out in my hometown and I tried to find the hardest job that I could have.
Mm-hmm.
Not an easy job because I wanted to get stronger. And, I found one company and they wouldn't give me the job because I was too young. And then I found these guys that plaster houses and stucco them. I'd work for them. And, it was a lot of hard work and I'd make it harder. They had planks that were like, 12 feet long and 2x10s. I used to carry 10 of them at a time.
Wow.
Instead of one because I wanted to get stronger.
So.
And I never ever tried to make things easier. I wanted to be harder. Said that because that's how you get better.
That's right.
If you're looking for an easy job, you're not going to be probably a good worker for the person you're working for. And it's not going to be good for you either. The guy that worked for me, he did a video of, or in a vignette of, on me and what I did while I was working for him. I one time I had him stucco some in a house. I held him by the ankles so he could. He was about 12 feet tall and he couldn't reach him. He wanted me to bring some scaffolding. I said, "Oh, let me grab you by the ankles. I'll just hold you up there." Went around the whole building, hold him up by his ankles.
Wow.
He was about maybe 200 pounds that I was holding right by his ankles, and he was doing stucco, and he had a pail with him in his hand, too.
Crazy.
I was crazy, because I wanted to get ahead, and I'm trying to get ahead in amateur wrestling right at the time,
because
I wasn't any good at all.
See, that's the thing, though, like... You have the ability to, like, look yourself in the mirror and say, I need to get better. Why do you think, like, today's youth and, you know, a lot of people in our country now don't have that ability?
You know, they got them thinking, and on the people that are doing it, it's kind of smart. They want them to thinking that there's nothing out there. There's no success out there anymore. There's no sense trying harder anymore. We're not going to get any place. We'll stay home with mom and dad. You know, we live in the greatest country in the world. This country, there's opportunities up whatever. You go out there, but you can't get them if you're going to stay home and if you're not going to be aggressive. They've been trained that it's not going to happen. Purposely. Because some people want to be able to control you.
Absolutely. Considering that, what are your goals moving forward with the promotion of this book for 2017? Like, in a perfect world, what would be, you know, the three or four things that you accomplish with this book this year?
My biggest accomplishment is to go out and do good things with it. I want to put that spirit back in the country, just like Donald Trump wants to put the spirit back in the country of hard work and dedication. And matter of fact, I was talking to some people down at Trump Tower, and I explained to them that, you know, I met him in Madison Square Garden, and I gave a speech, and he came over and said to me, if I could plug you into New York City, you'd light the city up with that speech. And then he won the presidency a few years later. And I'm thinking, Mr. Trump, President Trump, I would like to plug you in, I would like you to plug me into America so I can help you make America great again in some way. And I am going through an effort to try to get that message to him. One way or another, I'd just like to know, but that's my goal. I'm on a mission to try to get that message to Mr. President Donald Trump.
How do you think your book accomplishes that? Like, what do you think is the main message of your book to this country?
It's a story of a kid that was a loser. When I was in eighth grade, I was about to fall off the fence and become a disaster. And the sport of amateur wrestling turned that around very slowly. And the sport of amateur wrestling gave me an attitude as I can do anything. I just got to work for it. I love every day of my life. I'm excited every day of my life. I love my wife. I've been married to her for 42 years. I'm 67 years old, and I feel better than ever. I'm happy every day, but I don't sit down and pout. I don't sit down and say that I'm a victim. I go out there and try to do it. Never slow down. Always make a big effort and have fun doing it.